We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. You can download the app in the App Store or on Google Play for under $4, and you get 250 meditations from 30 expert teachers. Such a small investment to sleep better, feel less anxious, and to be more focused and productive. And your one-time purchase of the app helps to keep our podcast going. Give it a try. Let us know how you like it by emailing me at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We love having you with us. Today, I interview podcast host, journalist, and New York Magazine columnist, Anne Friedman. Her podcast, Call Your Girlfriend, is like eavesdropping on a conversation between two friends, Anne and co-host tech expert Amina Tussaud. It's popular because they are, well, funny, smart, a little badass, and they cover everything from politics to feminism to pop culture. I interviewed Anne because she's a newbie meditator, and she mentioned in her year-end newsletter that Meditation Studio app was how she started her meditation practice in January of 2016. I wanted to find out why it worked for her and check in after a year to see how her practice was going. When she started her practice, she had to let go of all the stereotypes of what she called, quote unquote, a good meditator. Like meditating at the same time every day, sitting in the same spot, in the same position. Anne does it her way. She mostly sticks with the guided meditations because she likes getting help from someone else to clear her head. Here is the talented and funny Anne Friedman. Anne Friedman, welcome to Untangle. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love your podcast. Anne's podcast, as you all know, is Call Your Girlfriend. And before we get into your brand new meditation practice, I want to understand a little bit about what your motivation was to start Call Your Girlfriend and sort of what's the vibe and what's that all about for people who haven't listened before.
Well, first and full disclosure, I am 33% of Call Your Girlfriend. I have a co-host who is phenomenal named Aminatou Sow, and we have a producer and editor named Gina Delvac, who is equally phenomenal. And so I think that maybe that's the first thing to understand, is that it's a really collaborative, small group effort. It's not one woman's side projects. I always want to point that out for sure. So the podcast sort of was born of the relationship between the three of us. Amina and I have been friends for a while, and Gina has a background in public radio. And she had said to us several times, you guys have a great dynamic, a great chemistry. People would love to listen to you in podcast form. And we were like, ugh, can't be bothered, busy with other things. Or audio as a medium sounded too technically difficult or too big of a hurdle. And then finally, one day, I think it was actually that we came up with the name, and that really sealed it. We were like, oh, we want to make a podcast called Call Your Girlfriend. That makes sense. We finally went back to Gina and said, okay, we're ready. We bought the URL, and she told us what equipment to buy, and we just sort of leapt in. Amina at the time said, you know, if a bunch of tech dudes do this, how hard can it be? So that is sort of our origin story, which is basically a lot of credit to Gina as the expert ear who could hear that it was going to work as a podcast. And then I guess credit to us for just trying it despite having zero experience. That's the magical formula.
It's the magical formula. But you were a journalist as well. So that must help a little bit in terms of interviewing and doing your research and all of that.
It is interesting. I mean, I'm a journalist in the written medium. And so to translate to audio has been interesting and challenging in some ways. You know, my writing style, for example, I've learned is a little bit too digressive, or maybe there's too many clauses to make it make sense spoken aloud. Anytime I've tried to read aloud something that I have written, it doesn't really translate as well. And similarly, I think, you know, when I'm interviewing someone for a written article, I know that no one, except for maybe a fact checker and myself, is going to listen to the transcript. And so I can ask the same question six different ways to try to get a more interesting answer, and you're not boring a listener. Whereas with audio, the stakes are really high. If you get kind of a non-answer, you have to figure out a way to ask it again in a way that doesn't sound like you're repeating yourself. So I don't know. I think the learning curve for me has been pretty steep, even though some of those journalistic skills definitely apply.
Yeah. What do you think is the secret sauce? Are there certain topics that help to flow? Is it that you can edit the podcast after you've done the interviews? What makes it sort of the juiciness that it is?
You know, I think that one thing that works about the podcast medium in particular is people understand it's different from a radio show, or the style of our show is meant to be conversational. It's meant to kind of feel like you're eavesdropping on our conversation or hanging out. And so that really takes off a lot of the production burden, I think, that other shows might face if they're trying to go for a more journalistic sound. We really do try to mirror what it's like to hang out and have a free-flowing conversation about something.
And that's what I really love about it. And do you have any sense of the topics that your listeners gravitate to the most, or is it kind of the banter between you and your colleague?
We try to talk about the range of things that we are genuinely interested in, and the women we are friends with are genuinely interested in. So, you know, that at this moment in time is a lot of politics. I don't think we're alone in being really upset and really preoccupied by like what's happening with our federal government at this point. So the podcast has really taken a strong turn toward the political. But, you know, historically, we talk a lot about what's happening with our bodies, or what's happening in pop culture, or, you know, just without being super, super personal, because I don't think either of us are really talking about, say, the most painful moment of our week with all of our listeners.
Right.
We do talk about the things that we're kind of mulling over and trying to figure out our feelings on, or maybe that we need to vent about. So, you know, in that way, it is meant to be kind of like the conversations that you have with your friends, maybe with a little less personal dishing thrown in.
And you also have a newsletter, which is how I found out about you, actually. There was one newsletter one week where you said, I think it was something like, thank you, Meditation Studio app, for making, for helping me start my meditation practice. Of course, we were all very excited to hear that. I want to hear a little bit about what brought you to meditation, and tell us a little bit about your experience getting into it and how's it going.
I have never been someone who is great with competition-based things. You know, like the idea that your Fitbit can sync to friends and you can see who's gotten more steps today, or, you know, competing against yourself to continually get a better time jogging around the park by your house. All of that stuff just does not work for me at all. I am in some ways a very competitive person, but when it comes to my physical and mental health, I want none of that. And so a lot of the apps that had been recommended to me to start off as a new meditator were oriented toward a slow progression, or sort of building up to being able to like meditate for a full hour or something like that. And it was very much the sense of show up every day, do a little bit more every day, get better and better at it. And while I would love to be the kind of person who can do that, I am pretty bad about showing up at the exact time every day to do just about anything. So for me, I sort of have come to think of meditation less of a fixed point in my daily routine and more like a tool that I use based on my physical and personal and stress level needs on any given day. So for me, sometimes that looks like I wake up and I take time to meditate in the morning. Sometimes it's like I'm traveling and actually it's the last 30 minutes before I fall asleep that I need to meditate because I'm all amped up from being on a plane and, you know, being out and about and doing my job. Other times it's like, oh, I haven't left my computer yet today and it's 4 p.m. I'm just going to lie on my back on the floor and meditate a bit. And I think once for me, I let go of that idea of people who are good at meditating wake up every morning and sit in the same spot and do it as a practice, and I could do it in this way that works for me. That really set me up to do it more regularly, weirdly, you know?
Yeah. Are you doing mostly guided meditations on the app, or are you starting to do some silent meditation? Do you see yourself like gravitating towards different teachers?
It's been really interesting. There's a variety. I mean, I would say that most of the time I rely on a guided meditation because trying to clear my head, usually I need the help of someone else telling me how to clear my head. And then there's often a period of silent meditation after I finish the guided portion. I would say that, you know, the guided portion sets me up. Occasionally I do sit in silence, and it's hard to say whether, I mean, again, I have a hang up around like, is it meditation? Am I just, am I just sitting? I'm sure this is a pretty common dilemma. But, you know, it's been interesting where, depending on my mood and sort of my needs in the moment, my preference for what type of voice I want to hear and what type of meditation I like can really vary. I mean, I have found, and this is probably some internalized misogyny, that I relax more when I hear like a deeper male voice. And I have a lot of self-criticism over that fact. I'm like, oh God, like, you know, I mean, I'm so pro-woman in all these outward facing areas of my life, and I need this male baritone to relax. Like, what is wrong with me? So I'm trying not to be too self-critical about some of my choices and how I do it. But yeah, the answer is there's some variety there as well. Yeah.
Well, we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
It's good not to be self-critical, right? Especially when we're talking about meditation. But there's one very deep voice that I hope you've already found on the app. It's a Zen monk from New York City. His name's Chodo. He has like the deepest baritone British voice.
I'm very familiar with Chodo and with the warm bath visualization. Does he also do the magic carpet one?
He does.
I also love that. I love that one.
So is there anything else, you know, about your practice that has been challenging you? Or do you have like sort of questions about how you're supposed to progress?
I don't know. I mean, I think there is still a part of me that thinks I would get more out of it if I were a little bit more regimented, or if I said it's a must, you know, half an hour every day or something like that. If I set some more rules, you know, and I guess I've sort of come down on it's better to do it in my kind of scattershot as needed way than to not do it at all. I am curious about the benefits of a more routine, say every day from 7 to 8 a.m. or something like that, versus just doing it when you can.
Yeah, you know what, I think, you know, so many different teachers would tell you different things. Like some Vedic teachers will tell you that you should meditate 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening, and that's plenty. Someone else may say, just meditate once. Someone else will say, just do as much as you can, you know, sort of in the way that you're doing. You know, you don't meditate to be a world-class meditator. You meditate to reduce stress, to be more focused, to be more productive, and to have all of these other benefits. So you feel that for yourself. It's always recommended that you start small. Like people say, even if you can just meditate like 5 minutes a day, that's way better than once a week for an hour. I think it's so great that you're just exploring all these different meditations. When did you actually start?
It was actually probably right about around a year ago. I had a friend recommend the app to me. Yeah, and so I think that's sort of how I found it. You know, like these things often go, I think I was pretty committed to doing it in the mornings for the first month or so. And then, you know, I do think it is something that I relied on as a tool throughout 2016. So that's what led me to mention it in the newsletter. So yeah, I guess I'm about a year deep if I can count like the moment when I started trying.
So awesome. And 2016 was such a hard year, and 2017 is sort of ramping up to be just a little anxiety provoking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a coincidence that I, you know, made more of a commitment to do this at the beginning part of last year. It not only when it's politically, you know, the climate that we're in now, but just in general, it's typical for people, I think, to think about their mental and physical health at the beginning of a new year.
What else do you do? Like, how do you take time for yourself while also being such a public personality and so out in the world? What are the things that you do to take care of yourself?
I really have to work to find outlets that are not words-based. You know, I mean, for a long time, pretty much my whole life, my primary hobby has been reading. And, you know, when reading and writing is also your career and reading is your hobby, you know, you really need to work to give that part of your brain a rest. So I live in a really beautiful part of Los Angeles with a few very hilly, kind of rugged parks. So I make an effort to get out and take a phoneless walk for an hour or so, at least a couple times a week. That's really important to me. Cooking is really important. I work from home, and so I don't have a commute or something to physically mark this is the end of my workday and now I'm starting my evening. And so for me, often that is walk to my kitchen and make dinner while listening to music or something. And again, it's not words based, but it is a nice hard break for me. So that's something that I find very relaxing. And just for me, like, I don't think I've ever Instagrammed a meal that I've made or identify publicly as someone who's like into food. And so it's very much a safe space apart from anything that I do for work. The question is a good one. I mean, I think that, you know, it comes up more and more often as the podcast gains listeners in particular, I think because it is such an intimate medium and people who listen to me and Amina feel very connected to us. It is weird where space, digital spaces that used to be exclusively private for me, like Instagram, are now in this weird semi-public, semi-private space where before I would, you know, not hesitate to post a photo of my dad doing something goofy, knowing it was just for my friends. My parents were just in town this weekend and my dad tried his first kombucha. Dad's first kombucha is a gram that I considered posting, but then I was like, all these strangers follow me. I haven't really, like, my dad doesn't know the context of me putting his face in front of all these strangers. I was like, I just didn't do it. And, you know, even though, like, that is something that kind of slowly slid from a private, just for pleasure and just for friends platform to something that is now a little bit more public, I'm still figuring out how to negotiate that. Whereas other stuff I do is very clearly like public facing and for work. There's a few areas where I feel unresolved about whether it's for me or for the world.
It is an interesting question though, because your podcast is so kind of all encompassing. There's very few issues that you haven't touched on. So I can see how it might be a little bit complicated to know where the boundaries are between you, what you feel, how you live, and your public life.
We talk about personal problems or things on the podcast, but, you know, nothing that is truly private, for example. So, you know, the things that I would really be like lie awake at night worrying about are things that probably aren't going to make it to the podcast, or things that are going to make me like cry in the arms of a friend are probably not going to make it to the podcast. Like things that I still feel unresolved about. And this is true in my writing as well. Things that I'm still working through often, not always, but often do not make it to my public facing work until I feel some measure of resolve or clarity.
How do you get to resolve or clarity? What's your process for that?
I mean, time. I mean, that's a big part of it, I think. You know, I have a pretty good journaling practice, which is not anything, again, much like my meditation practice, not really structured in terms of an hour a day or number of pages a day, but I definitely try to put a pen to paper and put a few thoughts down every day or every other day. You know, like that's a way that I work through things and can kind of be a broken record. I think we all have issues that pop up again and again in our relationships or in our professional life, and it feels redundant to keep talking about them to our closest friends. Like, I know I brought up this problem before. It's still a problem. You know, I mean, these kind of thorny recurring things. And I find the journal is a really nice space for that because it allows me to just repeat myself. And sometimes I don't do it very often, but when I flipped back through old journals, you can just see me saying the same things over and over and over and over until it kind of fades away, not from my life, but from the pages, you know, which is how I kind of know I've stopped panicking about it.
Right. Well, it stops being a question, sort of accepted in
exactly.
a different way. It's kind of one of the reasons that I love some guided meditations, because some of them take you on these visualizations that kind of shut off that very analytical part of your brain. And then it allows you to all of a sudden have these aha moments, or just to like look at things with a completely different lens.
The woman who cuts my hair and is also a friend, who is basically my therapist, she she was telling me, because I see her regularly, I have pretty short hair, she cuts it a lot. She hears me talk about the same problems over and over, you know, and is a good person to identify. This seems like it's still plaguing you. And she was telling me last time I saw her, you really need to get into your body. And I was like, what does that even mean? I am, of course, like a very cerebral person who loves to like work through things. You know, like I said, I'm like, I'm going to put it in my journal until like I work it out. And I'm generally, I wouldn't say resistant to, but kind of clueless about other paths to knowledge, including like, what is my body telling me? So I've been trying to figure out what that advice looks like for me.
Have you tried yoga?
I'm even more sporadic about doing yoga than I am about meditating, but, and I mostly do it when it's like, my body is like alarm bells. You've been at the computer so long, you are hunched in a permanent, like, you know, like old crone position over your keyboard. That's usually when I break down and do some yoga, but I understand the value. I've never committed, and I've never loved it. I've never like done 3 hours of yoga in a row and been like, God, I feel great, you know, or like whatever. I also don't get a runner's high or anything. So I'm like, I'm an indoor kid. Anyway.
I always say to people when they say they don't love yoga, I'm like, well, you know what? You probably haven't found the right teacher yet. It is kind of interesting what your therapist was saying to you about being more in your body, because a lot of these like contemplative traditions like Qigong and Tai Chi and even yoga, you know, they're all designed to kind of bring energy from, I don't want to say from your head into your body, but like into all of you.
Yeah. And I do agree that it's probably a matter of finding the right teacher or the right space for that. I have some great friends who are yoga teachers who, if they lived in my city, I'm sure I would see them regularly. And like the honest answer is I haven't really invested the time to make that like as a practice work for me. So, you know, yeah, you're not wrong that there's an easy answer.
Let me ask you a few other questions that might help our listeners get to know you a little bit better. If you had to give advice to your younger self, what advice would you give?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think that there are a lot of things that when I was in my early 20s in particular, decided on my own that I would not succeed at and so didn't even try to do. And I think some really concrete examples are like professional things I could have, should have applied to and didn't, because I assumed right away that I wouldn't be qualified or I didn't know the right people. And I think there are a few instances where I waited longer than I should have to move on or take a risk or something like that. That sense of knowing in my gut that something is the wrong choice and choosing it anyway for whatever reason, justifying it with my head, is something I continue to struggle with. And it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to hear and like act on even now, like factor in what does your gut tell you about, like, do you want to do this or is this the right choice for you? I think there are some things like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're obviously concrete things, right? I mean, like, don't waste your money on that rug. It ended up looking really bad in your house. Or don't date fellow journalists. That has a negative effect on how you feel about your own career. I have some concrete advice I would give. But most of it is like, frankly, is stuff that I'm still trying to learn. And maybe the process of telling a phantom younger self is just trying to learn it now as an adult.
I like what you were saying about being in your thoughts so much and not trusting or being as clear about your gut, because I've always had that too. And I have to say that that is one of the things that I think meditation has helped me with. And every teacher you'll ever meet will say, you know, you are not your thoughts. And you're like, well, what am I then? But it's sort of true, because if you sit with your thoughts long enough, you'll see that they change. So it is kind of interesting to shift that awareness to your gut and even trust it sometimes. Sometimes your gut and your body know more than your head. That's such a hard lesson, I think. I'm still learning that one too.
And even when I am doing things, even when I am physically, say, exercising, it is pretty comical the degree to which I think of my body as the servant of my mind. I was on a hike with a friend a few weekends ago, and there was a big, long uphill stretch at the end before we got back to the car. And I was like, you know, I just think of my body as like the grunt workers carrying the chariot of my mind, like up this hill, where I'm like, it's no big deal. Like, you know, in some ways I do sort of subscribe at a deep level to the, I could be a brain in a vat and still be mostly me, which is obviously false. I mean, I'm really, I'm going to be sitting here with the, you are not your thoughts for the rest of the week for sure.
Good.
So this is the heart of my current struggle.
I love that the body is the servant of your mind. When you do your pie charts, and we should tell people what the pie chart is first, these fabulous things on your website.
I made them for several years for a website called The Hairpin. And now I send them to people who are paying subscribers to my newsletter. So they've kind of had different roles. But essentially, they are like hand-drawn personal essays in a faux infographics format. They are really not data analysis of anything. It's sort of like a few, usually kind of jokes, sometimes sad, poignant truths organized in a circle, handwritten, and I take a photo and upload it. I also frequently, don't even redraw them if there's kind of a mistake. And yeah, now I have a special notebook for them. I've really upgraded. But yeah, I that back of the napkin feel sort of remains and also frees me up to just say, well, this is not a format that's about being perfectly designed or having every letter written as legibly as possible. This is always meant to be like what I'm thinking right now. So yeah, I've made a few that I like. There's one that I made about, this is pretty old now, about how I'm afraid I'm going to be found dead. Like, if you ever catch yourself doing something where you're like, this is just kind of a humiliating situation where, like, you know, like I dropped a pair of nail clippers in the toilet the other day. And I was like, if I slipped and banged my head on the toilet and was found dead with my hand, like, up the thing, you know what I mean? It's
yes.
Just like, whatever situation you're in where you're like, this is just mildly, like, not how I would want someone else to step into this situation and see me from the outside. Like, that's what that chart is about. And with the added sort of layer that I am an incredibly clumsy person who can find a way to injure myself in anything but a completely padded room. So there's that personal note that I'm sure other people with this problem might relate to that pie more. So yeah, that's a classic.
On one of your shows, you talked about the notion that women can have it all. What do you think of that? Do you think that's sort of a ridiculous statement, or does it even mean anything today? Or, what is that? What does that conjure up for you?
I mean, it's used as a shorthand in headlines and things like that to talk about women balancing or like negotiating family life and career. For me, I just think of it more as, and on that level, it is kind of bullshit. I mean, it's a distraction from the fact that we have no policies to actively support people of all genders who want to have a fulfilling career and, are spending time with their family or have like caretaking responsibilities. You know, in some ways, I'm like, it's a dodge. Like, we're going to argue about whether women can make this untenable situation work instead of saying this is an untenable situation.
Right. Right.
So that's more about the mainstream conversation. I mean, in terms of like, how do I feel about it personally? I think that, you can't do every single thing that you might ever want to do or that you might have the potential to do. You just can't. And so I don't know about have it all, but in terms of do it all, like, can I be the very best friend I'm capable of being to everyone who's important to me in my life at all times? Like, probably not. Does that make me a bad friend? No. And so I think that, like, those are kind of the finer distinctions about that conversation. Can I be like a perfectly capable partner, daughter, friend, parent, and some situations for like some people, mother, versus like, am I the exact version I think I'm capable of being in this role? Like, the answer is like, none of us are going to realize our full potential in any one area unless we like completely forego all these other things that matter to us. And, you see that over and over in interviews with people who are incredibly successful at one thing or in one area. It's like, I have yet to read one where I'm like, oh, it seems like they made no sacrifices to get there. This is all they want. So for me, it's just like, there's not enough time. And I go through this all the time professionally and sort of say, wow, I would love to, there's all these things, if I only cared about the podcast, that I would want to do to support that work and build that audience and work on that as a project. And there are all these writing goals that I have for myself. And then if I were to only focus on the newsletter, these are all the things that could happen. And it's like, well, I've made a choice that I care about all of these things. And that means I can't do any one of them to their fullest all the time.
Well, you sort of give up whatever notions of perfection that you might have in order to do a lot of things that you love and that you care about. And I think that is one of the big issues that we have these expectations of what perfection looks like, and so then we make all of these choices. But it's like what you're saying. You do the best that you can in all the areas that you choose to be in at any given time in your life. But it's your choice.
Totally. I mean, and I think for me too, in terms of, you know, how this relates to like modern questions of overwhelm, because I think having it all also, you know, speaks to that, like just feeling overwhelmed by the demands of life. You know, I mean, I have like, I think of the to-do list as a rolling thing, like it'll never be zero. Ever. It's just like, let's just keep things moving on the to-do list. Like the inbox, I will never reach inbox zero. The goal is to just keep things moving. There's somewhere between 10 and 70 emails that need a reply from me at any given time. And if the number's low, I've had the space for that lately. If the number is high, I've been traveling and busy, but like, it's always going to be there. And like, once you've made your peace with the fact that like, I don't know if I don't know if having inbox zero was having it all. That was kind of a weak transition. But, you know, like coming to accept that not just imperfection, but like incompletion.
Yes. So what is next for you? What's your next kind of big goal after you complete some of the things that you're working on now?
I don't know. I'm in a nice little period right now between I traveled a lot at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, and things for this coming year are not quite, you know, in crazy mode yet. So I'm in a mode of trying to figure that out for myself. I mean, I've had write a book on the rolling to-do list for years at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't have the idea or the spark or the, you know, I mean, it's not like I have a proposal that I've been trying to get someone to bite on. It's like, I'm still figuring out what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time on the business parts of what I do last year. And I feel strongly that this is a year I want to be more focused on the writing side of the work that I do. And I think, you know, maybe that will look like working on a book and maybe it won't, but I think, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what shape that takes. And I also do think that the current political climate is a big factor. I think we're all kind of trying to figure out how we change our work or our way of being in the world to react to and resist some of that.
Yeah, and prioritize.
Yeah. So the answer is I don't know, but I'm working on it.
Well, I think whatever you do, it's always amazing. Your podcast is amazing. Your newsletter's great. And I'm so excited that I had these moments to chat with you, Anne. This has been so, so fun for me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a real treat.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks so much to Anne. Check out the Call Your Girlfriend podcast and learn more about Anne on her website, annefriedman.com. Once again, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play.